the debut of a brand new show that helps you find ways to take back control in issues regarding your health. I'm your host, Roberta Fernandez. I'm a board-certified hypnotist, an NLP master practitioner, that's neuro-linguistic programming, and a certified hypnosis instructor here in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. I'm really grateful to be with you here every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm taking calls this morning at 946-6205, and I'd love to hear from you with your questions about hypnosis. You know, one of the most challenging things about putting this show together was finding a title that fit my vision of the show. I decided on Minding Your Health, Take Back Control. You know, as a hypnotist, minding is an obvious choice because hypnosis is a natural state of mind. Health reflects the broad spectrum for a variety of topics, issues, and modalities that we're going to be exploring along the way over the next year. Take Back Control is about empowering you in matters of your health through education. Over the next year, I'll be talking with various experts who have many different perspectives involving traditional and alternative healthcare. I'll be talking about issues like pain and opioid use, addictions, sleep issues, stress, fears, and other emotions, fun things like performance improvement for golf or sports and at work, weight issues, and even parenting. These are all ordinary issues and problems that impact ordinary people, just like you, involving your mental health and physical health and the quality of your life. Hypnosis can play a part in helping you be more productive and in reaching your full potential. We might have entire shows about hypnosis, or perhaps I'll simply illustrate how hypnosis can be a complement to whatever topic we're discussing. So, let's get started. What is hypnosis anyway? First of all hypnosis is self-hypnosis. A lot of people have the misperception that I control them or I can make them do something. Well, let me tell you, if that were the case, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you right now, and this world would be a much better place. Hypnosis is just this, a heightened state of awareness and focus where you're open to positive thoughts and ideas. Now, there are a lot of myths around hypnosis. In fact, I was watching TV last night and I saw an ad. I can't remember what show it was, but there's a show going to be on this week about hypnosis. It is not mind control. It is not brainwashing. I cannot hypnotize anybody against their will. It is a 100% consent state. I can't force you to do anything you wouldn't normally want to do. Your brain has lots of protective mechanisms built in so that you will always honor your morals and your ethics and your values. TV and the movies present hypnosis in a dramatic, exciting way because, well, it just makes for a good show, right? Sometimes they show that people get stuck in hypnosis, and that has never happened. Now, I will admit, there have been a couple of occasions in my office where people feel so good and so relaxed that they're just not ready to come out yet. And then I just tell them, hey, look, if you want another hour's worth of rest, it's, you know, $150. And they wake up, they emerge smiling and laughing. I heard you, they'll say, but it just felt so good, I wasn't ready to leave yet. But you cannot get stuck in hypnosis. Other people think they can't be hypnotized. Well, in a minute, we'll be talking about how you go in and out of hypnosis every single day. So you do it to yourself. But there are a few segments of the population that are unable to experience hypnosis. People that are in stages of dementia, for example. People that have very low IQs, like under 70. People that have mental illness, like schizophrenia. They cannot be hypnotized. Their brain works a bit differently than your typical brain. Another myth is that hypnotists have special powers. Well, again, I wish I did, but I don't. I'm a normal person like you who went to school to learn how to be a hypnotist. I am not a psychic. Hypnosis is not a truth serum. I do have clients lie to me sometimes in trance. I haven't figured out why that is, but it is obviously under their control and their choice. I am just an average person, and again, can't do anything, can't make you do anything that you don't want to do. So let's talk about when we do go in and out of this trance state. You can be in trance when you're driving a car. How many of you out there have driven from one place to another and not remembered how they got there? I know there's some head shaking in this audience, because driving produces what we call alpha trance. It's kind of a daydreaming state, and your conscious mind checks out, and your subconscious mind says, hey, look, I got your back. You can go on that mini vacation. And it gets you there. It stops at every red light, makes your turns, and there you are, all of a sudden at your destination. And your conscious mind is wondering, how did I get here? You could be in and out of trance while you're studying, while you're giving a speech, while you're doing something that you're very engaged in, like cooking or gardening or reading a book, watching a movie. We could be deeply engrossed in a book, actually almost becoming that character, and suddenly we're at the end and we look at our watches and 3 hours have passed by and you think, wow, I wasn't aware of anything else that was going on. That is hypnosis. The reality is we go in and out of trance every single day, at least twice a day. There's many stages of consciousness, but the four that I talk about as it applies to hypnosis, the first is beta. That's where you are right now. You're awake. Hopefully my voice isn't putting you to sleep. We are aware, we are conscious, we're using our logical mind. Then at the opposite end of the spectrum is delta. That's when we're asleep. That's the only time that our conscious mind totally checks out, when it is not aware of anything that is going on. This is why when you wake in the morning, you have no sense of awareness of time passing, for example. In between waking and sleep are two trance states, alpha and theta. Alpha is that light trance state, like when you're driving your car sometimes or you're watching television. Television is a great inducer of trance. This is why people pay a gazillion dollars for those Super Bowl commercials, because they know if you're open to the commercial that they're presenting, you might find yourself being more receptive to it. It's called advertising. And we're open to things that do appeal to us. Theta, where I do my work with my clients in my office, is that deeper trance state. And theta is where your mind is very receptive to receiving suggestions that you really want. So at least twice a day, you go in and out of trance, just as a normal function of your mind. When you are awake and it's time to go to bed, you have to go down through those two states of trance to get to sleep. When you are asleep and you wake up in the morning, you have to come back up through those two states of trance. So what you're doing just before you fall asleep, what you're thinking just before you fall asleep, is very important. Sometimes clients will come to me with sleep issues, and I'll ask them, what are you doing before you go to bed? And they'll say, oh, well, I watch TV. That's fine. Most people do that. What do you watch on TV? Well, I watch the news, or I watch those reruns of Criminal Minds. And I'll grin and I'll say, stop it. Just stop it. Because remember, television induces alpha trance. And so you're open to all of those ideas that you want to accept in those shows. So if you're very sensitive to what's being shown on the TV, and, you know, most of the news is not very positive, even the weather. We take those things in. And if we're doing it just before we're ready to go down through theta to delta, that sleep state, Those things are going into our subconscious mind, and they have subtle impacts. So it's a really good idea, before you go to sleep, to do something else, something that's quieting and calming and relaxing. In the morning, when it's time to awake, it's really important that we have positive thoughts. I know I used to wake up, I still wake up to my phone, but I had to turn my mail off. I'm a bit of a type A person, and when I would wake up in the morning and go to shut my alarm off on my phone, I'd see that annoying little red button that said, oh, you have 63 emails. Well, that started my day out with a lot of stress. Oh my gosh, while I'm sleeping, I wake up, I have all this work. So I had to turn that off so that when I awake in the morning, I can think about positive things, about the wonderful day I'm going to have and how excited I am about taking time to do that. And I don't open my email until I've had time to fully emerge out of those trance states into my normal state of consciousness. So it's really important to remember what you do before you go to bed and what you do when you wake up in the morning, because you are in that state of suggestion. I'm Roberta Fernandez. I'm a board-certified hypnotist and host of this new show. I'd love it if you tell all your friends about tuning in every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock. I'm here to remind you that hypnosis can help you be more productive and reach your full potential. Today, we're helping you start to take back control by empowering you through education about hypnosis. And when we come back, we'll be talking about how your mind works, and we'll be taking your calls and your questions. Let's continue talking about your mind and how it works. So there's a model of the mind that I teach all of the clients that come to see me. Your mind, in its simplest form, we divide into three parts. First, there's that conscious part of you, your conscious mind. Now, most of us think that this is the most powerful part of our mind because it is the part that we use every single day when we're awake. But in actuality, your conscious mind is only 5% of your brain's so-called computing power, your processing power. The conscious mind is home to that logical and analytical thinking. It's that part of us that just has to figure everything out. You know how it is when you get really puzzled about something, it bothers you, doesn't it? Yeah, we have to have a reason for everything, and it's our conscious mind's job to figure that out. And guess what happens? Sometimes we think we figured it out when we really just kind of made it up. Oh, we'll take some of that stuff that's based in logic and truth, but you know, it might not make total sense to us, but we figure out a way to have that happen, don't we? The conscious mind is also home to your short-term memory. So listen, don't beat yourself up if you can't remember what happened this time last year. It's not the job of your conscious mind to remember way back then. Your short-term memory is your working memory, the things that you need on a day-to-day basis. You know, that kind of memory that when your phone rings, you don't look at it and go, gee, what is this and what do I do with it? No, you automatically know what to do. Push the button, pick it up the phone, and talk, right? So that's your short-term memory. It's also home to our willpower. Willpower isn't very long either. It's kind of like adrenaline. It gives us that short burst of strength. I tell people willpower is like what you use if you're a donut fanatic and you're trying to lose weight to not drive by that wonderful donut shop on your way to work. You can take an alternate route and use your willpower to do that. But if you're already in that donut shop, willpower is out the door. You've already made the choice. You know you're going to have one of those donuts. So willpower gives us that little extra. It is also the home to our shoulds. I should do this. I should be able to stop smoking. I should be able to change my habits. I'm going to bed early, so I should be able to get a good night's sleep. That's our conscious mind. Then, if we look to our subconscious mind and our unconscious mind, that's where 95% of our computing power resides, 95% of our processing power. Literally, our subconscious and unconscious mind are doing hundreds of thousands of things at one time. All of your digestive system, nervous system, circulatory system, your bodily functions are happening behind the scenes. We're not even aware of it. The subconscious mind is home to our emotions, our intuition, and our values, our beliefs, the rules that we have about life, and it's home to our imagination. We're going to talk about imagination in the next segment. It's where our life stories are. Literally, everything that we have always wondered, that we've experienced in this life, tasted, seen, felt, described, it's all in there somewhere, and you know that to be true. You could be driving in your car, going down the street, and a song comes on the radio, and guess what? It might be 50 years ago, and you're back at that high school prom, and you remember the music, you remember your partner, you remember what you have on, like you're living it again. The subconscious mind is home to our wants. These are the things that we need, that we desire, and guess what always wins? At least 99% of the time. Our emotions are always going to trump logic, aren't they? I really want that dress. I know I'm going to look amazing in it, but I can't afford it. The logical mind will argue, guess who's going to win? Eventually, you'll figure out how to get that dress, won't you? Because that's how powerful this is. And they're almost the polar opposites, aren't they? One cannot do the job of the other. And yet sometimes we expect that to happen, but it doesn't. Now, in between the conscious and the subconscious mind is something called the critical factor. We don't always have the critical factor. We're not born with it. It doesn't start to appear and develop in our brains until we're around first or second grade. So guess what that means? The critical factor is protection. It is a protective mechanism that keeps things from going into the subconscious mind. And it protects our conscious mind. Remember, it's pretty weak. On our A game day, it can only handle maybe 7 to 9 things at a time before we get overwhelmed. Now, I'm 58 years old. If everything in my subconscious mind started bubbling up all the time into my conscious mind, I'd be crazy. I would be overwhelmed by that. So that critical factor, that protective mechanism in our brain keeps that from happening. And that's very helpful to us. If every time I had a new idea, and believe me, I have new ideas all the time, if I had to reorganize everything in my subconscious mind, I wouldn't be able to handle that. So it's a protective filter, but the other thing that it does is it keeps us from knowing what's inside that subconscious mind. It doesn't allow us to access it. Well, in hypnosis, we can start to access it. Now, I see we've got some callers coming in. Sandy, if you'll hold on for just a little bit, I'm going to come to you after the break so I can finish up this segment, but I want you to know I haven't forgotten about you. I want to talk about what happens when your brain is in trance. We think of trance as relaxation, and clients in my chair are very relaxed, but not always. You've seen those stage shows. You know those people are doing crazy stuff up there. They're far from being relaxed, right? It is a focused concentration that allows our brain to process information more democratically, for our left brain and our right brain to communicate easier and talk nicer to each other. We feel really good when we've had even short sessions of hypnosis because it's almost like REM state biochemically. We can allow things to let go like we do in our dream state. Now, I want you to know that we're going to continue talking about this. Sandy's going to join us when we get back, and we're going to take her questions. But I want you to remind you that this show is about addressing ordinary problems and concerns that impact you, ordinary people, so that you can understand how this mind of yours works and take back control of your life. So let's, while we're waiting to find Sandy again, talk about the power of your imagination. So here's what the scientific research shows us. Your brain cannot tell the difference between what's vividly imagined and what's real. and it processes physical and emotional pain in the exact same way. Can't tell the difference between that either. So let's talk about a couple of experiments that support and that illustrate those theories, which actually I guess aren't theories. We know that they're fact. A long time ago, there was a research done on poison ivy. They brought a bunch of people in and they said, okay, we're going to rub poison ivy on your right arm and some oak leaves on your left hand. And they put them all into trance. And the researcher said, okay, here goes the poison ivy. And immediately, all but one person broke out into hives on the right arm. The problem was the research had actually put it on their left arm. But because they believed that that was the case, that it would be the right arm, the body had the right arm react. Now, I'm going to stop here for a second. We're going to go to Sandy. We found her again. Sandy, welcome to the show. What can I do for you?
Hi, Roberta. Well, I've been on hold. I was on your website. You have a very nice-looking website.
Thank you.
I really liked it. I just have a couple of questions for you. I was wondering, because I was on the website looking around and I see that I can come in for a consultation, I was wondering, like, what happens? Do you hypnotize me at that time? I have some weight that I want to lose. And so my first question is, what happens during the consultation? My second question is, if I let you hypnotize me, will I remember everything when I wake up?
Good question, Sandy. So when you come in for an initial consultation, it really is just a talk about you, why you're there, what your issue is, how long it's been going on. And with weight, we take a pretty detailed look at that. So you'll fill out some paperwork, you'll learn something about hypnosis, and we want to make sure this is the right modality for you. Sometimes people think they're ready for it and they're not. And remember, I said that I can't do anything to you. I can't make you eat less or exercise more. So you have to really have the desire to accomplish the goals that you're coming in for. So we spend a lot of time, usually about 45 minutes in that consult, just talking about you and what your concerns are, what your goals are, and deciding if this is going to be the right thing for you. We don't do hypnosis in that initial consultation because I really want you to think about it and make sure it's what you want to do. Because when you commit, we're going to ask you to commit. And so that's really important. The second part of your question was, I just forgot. What was the second part?
Well, I was just wondering, if I let you hypnotize me, will I remember everything when I wake up?
Yes, you will. Sometimes clients that have been hypnotized a lot, maybe they've had a few sessions with us and they're tired at the end of the day or whatever. You know, they may feel like they're fading in and out. But here's the really funny thing. Sometimes clients remember at the moment, but it comes to them the next few days. And usually during the sessions, all of our clients are talking to us, so they may not remember that, but we know that they haven't fallen asleep, and we know that they're still engaged. Their conscious mind has just gotten so comfortable that it checks out. But I would say in 90%, maybe even 95% of the cases, my clients remember everything that happens. Does that answer your question, Sandy?
Yeah, it does. And like I said, I really am impressed with your website, and I'm so glad that I got to tune into your show this morning.
Thanks so much. Yeah.
So how long, if I make an appointment, like how long does it take to get in?
That depends. We have a few hypnotists in the office, so there's a scheduling button there. You can just pull it up and look at the hypnotist calendar and yours and find a date and just book it right online.
So if I come in for a consult, will you tell me at that time whether you think you can hypnotize me? Or, like, how do I know? When does that happen?
Yeah, that happens in the initial consultation. We're looking at you and deciding if you're a good hypnotic candidate. Like I say, some people, you know, they have situations that may not make them the best candidate. But I would say, and probably 95% of the clients that come into the office, we don't really have a lot of concerns with that. There's lots of techniques, and that's the one thing clients really don't have to worry about too much is, can they be hypnotized? They just have to want to. Sandy, okay. I thank you so much for asking all these wonderful questions. I encourage all of our listeners to go to the website. There's so much information there that you can download for free or that you can find out about hypnosis. And thanks for calling, Sandy.
Thank you, Roberta.
You're welcome. And now we're going to go to Becky from Minneapolis, and she has a question on insomnia. Go ahead, Becky.
Hello. Very interesting show. Can I just relate something to you that happened to me when I was a kid, just real quickly, and then my question?
That'd be great.
Okay, I was a Girl Scout Brownie. Probably we were, if my memory, I'm 65, but memory serves me maybe between 10 and 13 years old. And we used to do crazy things when we were kids, and we were all out camping as girls. We would hypnotize each other, we thought. And I think back now, and there were several of us, probably in a group of seven or eight, that, you know, you could tell actually we're under some sort of trance, and we thought we were pretty cool. But when I look back, it's amazing to me that that could happen, probably because we didn't have the tapes, you know, messed with as we do as adults, and we were willing to do that. My problem was I was probably the only one that really didn't. I resisted.
Yes.
And, okay. And it never happened for me. Well, now I, as an adult, I have chronic insomnia and have been trying CBT for insomnia.
Yes.
Which part of that is, you know, you have a limited time to sleep and you have to get up at a certain time if you're not, if you're no longer asleep. And that's very hard for me because I'm exhausted most of the time. But with those two things in mind and a whirling mind, my mind is always busy. Would I be one of the ones that you would say probably not, might not work for me?
No, not at all. And let me address two things there, Becky. Okay. Thanks for telling the story about when you were a child.
Sure.
Because here's the thing. Anybody can go on to YouTube and find out how to hypnotize somebody. It's really not that
right.
hard. I can put somebody into a trance, help guide them there in 8 words or less. And people mm-hmm. find that amazing. It can be instantaneous. You have to want it. And so
yeah.
when you're young and you're experimenting and you're open to all these ideas, yeah, that's going to happen really easy. Obviously, the reason why you go to a trained hypnotist is you want to make sure they know what to do with you when you get there, right? So, right. And so as far as you being a good candidate or not, here's what I find happens with most people. And insomnia is certainly the case, but it can be a wide range of issues. We start focusing on the problem so much that that's all we can think about. It's all we can think about. And what happens is that what we focus on expands. And so every night when you're saying, oh, I have to get to sleep, I only have this many hours to sleep, what are you focusing on? You're focusing on the problem, right? What you want to focus on.
Physical problems that aggravate.
Yeah, and sometimes that happens. And that's why we do a really thorough intake. But
right.
I have to tell you, of all the things that people come to see me for, and they're not related to sleep at all, almost every single client will report that they're sleeping better. It's very much a positive side effect of hypnosis, because remember, before we left in the last segment, I said that the hypnotic state was biochemically very similar to REM sleep. So the short answer, without knowing your history, and I would encourage you to look at the website and come in for the consult. It's $50, and if you decide to move forward, you know, we credit that toward your bill. It really is just a way to say, is this right for me? Because you have to feel comfortable about hypnosis and feel hopeful that it will work for you, and have to really want the change. So I'd encourage you, Becky, to go and look around. You can call me back after the show. I'll be at the office, and we can talk a little bit more about your personal situation. But we have really good luck with insomnia. Hypnosis is well-researched in the area of science around sleep issues and pain issues especially. So,
is it an ongoing thing? I mean,
no, actually,
a chiropractor where you have to go in, you know?
No, you know, you have to learn self-hypnosis, and that usually takes a few sessions. Most of our clients come between 4 and 6 sessions. Some of those sessions are 1 hour, some are 2 hours. But our goal is to empower you to take back control. I'm going to teach you self-hypnosis, so you can do this on your own. And if you practice it and you do it, It'll work for you, and you won't need me. I like to joke that I am constantly putting myself out of work. So,
yeah. Well, I'm a big DIY person. I've done the Epley maneuver and, you know, trying to do the CBT at home, which maybe is why it's not working so well.
Well, I'll have to tell you, hypnosis and CBT, there's been research around that too. They find that when you use both together, it makes both of the things more effective. So I would encourage you to continue doing your CBT work. I work with a lot of therapists. I'm very comfortable and knowledgeable about what they do. I refer to them. They refer to me. And hypnosis is a complement to anything you might be doing with your therapist or your doctor. So, Becky,
My main goal actually is to get off Ambien.
Yeah, a lot of people.
And to fall asleep. I want to just fall asleep.
Exactly. And a deep, nice, restful sleep. Becky, thanks for calling in. And feel free to call my office and we'll continue to discuss.
All right. Thank you.
Beautiful. All right. So before the next break comes up, I want to give you another research project that talks about this idea of the brain not being able to tell the difference between what's real and imagined. Scientists divided groups of people into two, and they had the first group exercise their finger, their index finger, just bending it up and down, up and down, up and down. They asked them to do it 10 minutes a day for 30 days. The other group of people, they said, look, we just want you to close your eyes and imagine bending that finger with someone in the background yelling, harder, harder. So at the end of 30 days, the scientists brought everybody back, and the group that had actually exercised their finger had increased strength of 30%. The group that had only imagined exercise their finger had increased strength of 22%, and they hadn't even moved it. That's because the brain sends signals as if it was happening to those muscles that activated it. And why the results obviously aren't going to be as good as the real thing, it is why professional athletes in all sports use some kind of guided visualization or hypnosis. Your brain can't tell the difference. And when we come back in our next segment, we'll continue this discussion. When we left, we were talking about the power of your imagination. We have had so much scientific research around hypnosis, especially in the last 10 to 12 years as our imaging equipment has really gotten so incredibly amazing. We can see what's actually happening in the brain while people are in trance and better understand why we've always known that hypnosis works. Now we really are putting together the pieces of why it works and perfecting how we work with our clients. When we were last talking about the research and the power of the imagination, the thing I want you to take away from this is that your thoughts become things. When your brain has a thought, I am this or I have this, it believes that whatever comes after that I am or I have, it believes it as the truth. When we constantly say the same things to ourselves, whether internally or externally, over and over again, and we invest passion into it, it becomes our truth. So we have to become aware of our thoughts and choose them wisely. Now, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the brain and what happens in trance, because it's important in understanding why hypnosis really does work and why you are largely responsible for that change that you're seeking to actually happen. It's estimated that our brain has over 100 billion nerve cells, and each one of those nerve cells connects with 5,000 others. Now, that's a lot of complexity for our brain to be able to manage on a regular basis. So how does it handle all that complexity? Well, it automates things, your thoughts, behaviors, and your actions. We call them habits. Habits are simply automatic thoughts, feelings, or behaviors. And here's the good news about having habits that we don't like. We change our thoughts every day, don't you? I know this morning when I got up, I had laid out a red sweater, and I know you can't see me, but I've got purple on. I woke up this morning and said, wow, what were you thinking? Why did you want to wear that? And so I changed my thought about my clothing. We can change our thought about anything, and you do this many, many, many times during the day. So the good news is that those habits that you might have that you don't like, well, they can be changed. They can be broken. Think about this being true. Every time you go to tie your sneakers, for example, as soon as you pick up those laces, you don't think about, oh, I gotta cross this string over this string and make a bow. No. In fact, if you were to really think about how to tie your shoes, it'd probably take you twice as long to do it because your brain automates it. You've been tying your shoes since you were 6 years old. You don't have to think about it anymore. It's how you drive from one place to the other and allow that conscious mind to check out and still get there. When you drive your car, you don't think about, oh, I've got to take my foot and move it from the gas to the brake, and I have to press this hard. I have to take my left hand and push down on the blinker. You don't think about any of that. Because once you do something several times, your brain takes note, and it says, oh, she's done this before. And after you've done it a few times, it will energetically connect all of those neurons that it takes to do that activity or to think that thought or have that feeling. After you do it repeatedly for a while, it says, wow, she's not going to give this one up. I'm going to chemically bond all of those nerves now. And so it will happen that much faster. And once you've done it repeatedly for, say, 5 to 7 weeks, your brain actually physically bonds the nerves that it takes to have that thought or feeling or do that behavior. So it becomes instant and automatic. And we don't have to think about it anymore. This is how our brain stays efficient. And so this is important to know that when we have habits, I don't believe we actually break them. If this were true, and I'll use myself as an example, maybe in the next show I'll talk about how I came to be a hypnotist. I hadn't ridden a bike for 5 years because of some really bad knees. I got on a bike again this summer for the first time in 5 years. Now, by the time I got to the end of the block, you know, I was a little shaky at first, but once I got to the end of the street, it was like I'd never not ridden that bike. What I had done was taken that old habit of knowing how to ride that bike, and I put it up on a shelf somewhere, and it got pretty dusty. But once I got it down again and I dusted it off, it came back. It was always there. The thing was, I hadn't used that particular skill in a long time, and so my brain let it be forgotten about. Smokers, for example, might drive by the gas station where they always bought their cigarettes, and it might be 30 years since they've smoked. They might have a thought about, oh, you know, that's where I used to buy my cigarettes, and they might have a thought about smoking. They just don't have any desire to do it anymore. Because what we do and what I teach people to do in hypnosis is to replace the habits we don't want with something that we do want, something that is positive in our lives. And once our brain gets trained, we default to the latest and greatest. And so our brain will go toward the new habit versus the old habit. And the longer we don't do that thing, well, the longer it stays away from us and it becomes less powerful and less meaningful. It is simply the way our brains are naturally designed to work. Now, one of the things I'd like to do before we finish up here is to talk about the difference between me and a therapist. It's a question I get commonly, and we're going to have some therapists on later shows. I refer to a therapist, and they refer to me. I work in the subconscious mind. They primarily work in the conscious mind. They use talk therapy to work with people who have mental disease like depression and anxiety, many things like that. I work in conjunction with them if patients are referred to me from a therapist or they have a mental illness. But I do not treat that at all. In fact, I don't treat, diagnose any kind of condition, and I certainly don't cure anything. I just help in the underlying things that go along with it. So we've come to the end of the debut of Minding Your Health, and I'm really excited to be here with you every single week to have this platform to educate you on a variety of health topics. Thanks for joining me. I'm Roberta Fernandez, a board-certified hypnotist at the Fair Hypnosis Center, and your host for Minding Your Health.